You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Well, we're starting to see a major decline in COVID cases, in COVID hospitalizations, in COVID deaths. Several states have reported zero COVID deaths for the first time in months. And hopefully the trend is going to continue on. Well, here to talk about it is our good friend, Dr. Dean Finelli. You are an attorney, like myself, special counsel to Cooley LLP, and we've both been kind of observing this whole thing for, the better part of a year now, Dean, and, you know, it's amazing to just see the whole thing just kind of fading away.
Yeah, it's great to join you, and, you know, as you mentioned, it's every measurable parameter when you look at deaths, when you look at hospitalizations, when you look at how different states are handling this, whatever objective piece of evidence we look at, we're moving in the right direction. You know, so things are really shaping up, you know, Operation Warp Speed, getting these vaccines prepared and out to the public was a great success. And the Biden administration logistically getting us at one point, you know, averaging over 3 million doses a day was really just a great achievement. So by all measurable accounts, you know, we're moving through this. And as you mentioned, hopefully we'll be through this sooner than we all expected.
Yeah, well, I guess it's never too early to begin a postmortem, if you'll pardon the comparison. But, you know, the CDC is just really the whole event. The whole COVID pandemic has really pointed up or illustrated a lot of weaknesses on the part of the CDC with inconsistent statements by Dr. Fauci and others, and really confusing the public more than helping them to make the right choices. And, you know, the lockdowns, the mask mandates, all these things really has been instrumental in further undermining the public's confidence in government and in the so-called experts.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, I think you're right. You know, this has gotten almost from the beginning very politicized. And, you know, unfortunately, that politicization, you know, made its way into these government entities and organizations that we rely on to oversee the public health of the country. And, you know, you're right. We, as Americans, we need to rely on the information coming out of these organizations, especially the CDC. And it was very inconsistent. You know, at some point, we were hearing even after people were vaccinated, they still needed to wear masks. And, you know, certainly we can look abroad and see what's going on in India. And last year, India seemed like they were handling this very well. And then it went sideways very quickly for them. So, you know, we can give these organizations some leeway and say, okay, you know, they're being overly cautious. But I think, you know, as you pointed out, some of the messages were just inconsistent and not based on science. And, you know, more recently, it was, in my opinion, very abrupt how the CDC went from a point where they were telling everyone, you know, be cautious, continue to wear your mask, to all of a sudden, you don't need to wear masks indoors or outdoors. Now, I think from a messaging standpoint, I think the CDC is now getting it right. If you're vaccinated, that's the whole point of being vaccinated. You know, you should let those individuals relax some of the strict requirements that we saw. But certainly the abruptness of how that came out of the CDC was pretty surprising.
And, you know, the thing is, when you see a lot of these states, look, if you're under 50 and you don't have comorbidities, you have virtually no chance of dying from this thing. If you're over 50 or you have comorbidities, then it's potentially very dangerous, life-threatening. And 78%, I read an a statistic, and I've seen it in a few places, 78% of the people who died were morbidly obese. And why wasn't there a major campaign against obesity that, you know, being a normal weight lowers your chances of dying from COVID dramatically? And also the fact that vitamin D, zinc, and other supplements were shown to be highly effective in preventing death. A lot of things just weren't addressed when you, I don't know if you had the opportunity to watch Ron Paul's recent rants on the topic, but another thing is people who actually have had COVID, there's a very minor chance of getting it again and an even lesser chance of dying from it. And yet the CDC hasn't seen fit to really do any appropriate research or issue any statements on the topic. They just say, get the vaccine, whether you've had it or not. And really, for people who supposedly embrace science, they seem to have missed the boat.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, think about that. So that last point about, you know, just blindly telling people, get the vaccine. Now, certainly, you know, we want people to get vaccinated. Vaccines have historically have saved millions, tens of millions of lives. But when you're talking about a vaccine, you know, you're talking about generating the body's artificially generating the body's immune response. And as you mentioned, if you have experienced the virus naturally, you would have that immunity. So, you know, if you put it, a lot of what we've been hearing hasn't really seemed like it's been based in common sense. If you went to the doctor, you know, and your doctor said, oh, you have the flu, you know, your doctor's not going to give you a flu shot. You know, so I think by the same means, we're putting this emphasis on getting people vaccinated. And I don't want to suggest that people shouldn't get vaccinated, but we also don't know the number of people that have actually contracted the virus themselves who have natural immunity. So we're basing this herd immunity, we keep hearing that, solely on the vaccinations, whereas we're probably where we need to be already. Because as you mentioned at the top of the story, the deaths, hospitalizations, all these objective measures are going in favor of getting through this. So, you know, I agree with you. I think the CDC, whether it's telling people how to take supplements that could have helped, whether it's just providing consistent advice, or whether it's just having a uniform message of, you know, look, if you've experienced the virus, you have immunity, it's not necessary for you to rush out and get the vaccine. You know, we just haven't heard that consistent message.
Yeah. And really, when there weren't enough vaccines to go around, if the people who had gotten COVID were said, hey, you're probably okay if you want to get it, that's fine. It makes sense probably to get it, but wait until the rest of the people have gotten it who really are at risk and at danger of really contracting COVID.
That's right. I mean, we've known for almost a year now that people over 65 were the highest risk, people with comorbidities, people over 50. You know, once you hit that 50 mark, you got below that age, the likelihood of having serious complications was very low. Nonetheless, you know, it was present, but at least inform the public and let people know that we're looking at these statistics. And as you mentioned, and I think a point that probably wasn't emphasized enough was that people that have experienced the virus naturally and will have that immunity, you know, we keep telling people get the vaccine. Well, there's people out there that scientists out there who have said, you know, maybe people that have natural immunity from experience of the virus shouldn't get the vaccine, because, you know, we're seeing people that have these complications from getting the vaccine. And that could very well be that people have already had natural immunity and now they're getting the vaccine and that's causing some of these issues. It's something that we should look at. And I think, you know, certainly we needed to get people vaccinated in those high risk areas. But this across the board, you know, even talking about colleges and requiring students to have vaccinations for college, I think it's a little over the top, in my opinion.
Yeah. And the idea of closing the schools for people who are at very low risk, that didn't seem to use a lot of thought, a lot of higher brain power either, did it?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Lumina Gold, ticker symbol LUM on the Toronto Venture and LMGDF on the OTC, is yet another of legendary mining investor Ross Beaty's Lumina Group. It's advancing the largest primary gold deposit in Ecuador. The resource is estimated to contain 16.7 million ounces of gold and 2.2 billion pounds of copper. At just $7 US per ounce gold equivalent, it trades at an incredible 13% of its net present value. More good news is on the way with an updated PEA study expected in Q2 of 2020. It has unparalleled infrastructure. There's grid power to camp with plentiful, inexpensive hydropower available. It's close to two ports and is just 8 kilometers from a paved highway. Water is plentiful. It's at low elevation, and the closest community, which is very supportive of Lumina's effort, is just a 7 kilometer ride. With all this going for it, it's likely to follow the typical Ross Beaty formula, which means big returns to shareholders. Find out more and sign up for notifications at luminagold.com. That's Lumina, L-U-M-I-N-A gold.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
No, and that issue really just was so politicized. I mean, we know kids, you know, even if they were in school with masks on, were very safe. You know, teachers were safe as well with masks on. So there were ways to get kids back to school sooner. I know my son is still out of school. And, you know, to this day, you know, that still confuses me. You know, certainly I could get it last March when we didn't know a lot. We were still learning about this virus, why schools were closed down. But, you know, at this point, most teachers are vaccinated, if not all, and or at least have the ability to be vaccinated. And even if they're not, we know how to get kids in school and keep people safe.
Yeah, exactly. There's just so much, you know, just so much fear, uncertainty, doubt, as they call it, FUD, right? That you really like look and say, like, the inmates are really running the asylum here, you know?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. The power of the teachers union over decision making by the, you know, the administration really was just kind of surprising and shocking to some degree when you see that a lot of the decisions and language that was coming out of the CDC mirrored some of language that was, you know, proposed by the teachers unions.
Yeah. So somebody needs to be in charge of this. I'm not like saying that it needs to be a centralized effort, but I think that we got 50 states plus Puerto Rico plus a bunch of territories. I think there's 7 territories. They need to work better together because they knew that we were going to have a pandemic at some point. It's happened before in the past numerous times, you know, going back to 1917, and then we had 1957, I think it was the Hong Kong flu. We've had the Asian flu. We had SARS-1 and Ebola, all these things. And we put billions of dollars into this deal. And this is what we wind up with, you know? It's a really kind of a little bit disheartening, and not to mention the damage that was done to the economy, to many of these small businesses out there, and the psychological damage that was done to our children from having to miss over a year of school for what appears to be no particular reason, does it?
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, you hear even when Texas opened up or dropped its mandates not too long ago, you know, the administration criticized Texas. And, you know, Texas was one of those states you mentioned that last week they reported no deaths. So, you know, it's become very politicized. It's really unfortunate because, you know, you would think an issue like this would bring the country together. But even in a pandemic situation, you know, we're seeing kind of politics drive the issue. Which is unfortunate.
And we all suffer for it accordingly. So it's never too early to do a postmortem. The only reason to wait is to depoliticize it a bit. I don't know if that's possible at this point or not. But hey, one thing I wanted to talk to you about was the administration basically wanted to disregard the intellectual property patents on these vaccines and just give the keys to the mansion, if you will, out to the world. On the one hand, I understand that their reasons for doing it, to get the vaccine out there, because the people who really are at risk, whatever you think about the vaccine, if you're 65, you got COPD, you're obese and diabetic and high blood pressure, your risk from the vaccine is probably the least of your worries. COVID really bad for that. So, but point is that giving out the IP that the government spent tens, maybe hundreds of billions of dollars creating, is that really the best way to go?
Yeah, and I don't think it is. You know, when you look at IP, I think there's this misconception that when you look at intellectual property, when you look at patents, that it's just basically a recipe to describe how to make these vaccines. It couldn't be further from the truth. It's a complex web of patents that are out there, whether it's to the mRNA that's in the modified mRNA that's in the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, whether it's the delivery systems that these vaccines use. For example, the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines use lipid nanoparticles, these balls of fat. The AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson vaccines use these modified cold viruses as vectors to bring in the genetic material. So there's a complex web of patents out there. And more importantly, even if you waive that, the patents, the underlying know-how and technologies to make these vaccines is not simple. So it's not as if you just waive the patents, you put up a manufacturing facility, and you automatically have the ability to make these vaccines. It's very complicated. And I think by the time that they would waste trying to build additional manufacturing facilities, you know, that's going to take months, if not over a year, to do. In my opinion, it would be better just to work with the companies that already have these vaccines, have the underlying know-how, understand how to do this, and just expand out their manufacturing capabilities so they, you know, they could do it. Because the point is, a lot of the underlying technology is not only useful for vaccines, it's useful for other delivery and other treatments of other indications as well. So the idea that these companies would effectively give away their know-how and give away their trade secrets to allow others to make this, I just don't think it's realistic, because that's kind of the know-how and the trade secrets, that's kind of the crown jewels of these pharma companies. So, you know, I think in principle, everyone thinks, you know, this is a good idea. We look back at the HIV and the AIDS epidemic, where a lot of developing countries had access to drugs and other countries like Africa did not. I think that's kind of driving this. We don't want to see another issue like that, but I just don't think it's going to be very effective.
Yeah, agreed for sure. And the fact is, we spent billions of dollars on it. The Chinese vaccine turned out not to be so great. The European one, again, less effective. But when you look at it all, I mean, really, the Warp Speed government actually did something right. But because of all the other incompetence, they didn't really get full credit for it, which is kind of unfortunate. And the politicized environment, the fact that these companies were able to race these vaccines to market as quickly as they were, is really quite amazing. And I think that the decreasing numbers that we see in large measure due to the vaccine's efficacy. So I hope we learned something from this mess.
I hope so, because the public-private partnership through Operation Warp Speed to get these vaccines authorized was just really a medical marvel. You know, typically, as we talked about in the past, that you're talking about a decade to make a drug or a vaccine. Here it was done in under a year. So, yeah, it was truly a medical marvel. And I think, you know, that's why we're seeing the U.S. kind of in the good position it is now. And even hearing the administration say that we're going to start giving out some of the vaccine that we have here, because we're moving in such a good direction to start helping other countries.
Yep. And that's the way it should be. Well, we really appreciate you coming on. If people want to find out more about you, Dean, and your work and your writing, where's the best place to find you?
I am an attorney in Washington, D.C. at Cooley LLP. People can look me up at cooley.com, and I'm happy to answer any questions. And it's always a pleasure to join you.
Likewise, great to have you. Any questions, comments for Dr. Fanelli, just send me an email. I'll forward them off to him and you can get a good answer. It's kl@carrylutz.com, the email address. Don't forget, sign up for a free newsletter on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Dean, always great speaking with you. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Cary Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.